welcome to the interview. Thanks for doing this, Kevin.
Well, you're welcome.
This would be cool. So what I'm going to do is ask you I'm interviewing the interviewer, so the tables are being turned on you.
Yeah, I know. I love that part.
Let's jump right in with questions about exercise, because I know your main business, you're a fitness consultant, and you do Renegade Health, and so I'll just jump in with those. So I thought a good place to start was the fact that you recently turned 30, which is, to most people, a big milestone. I was just wondering how that affected you, if at all.
I'm scared, man.
You're scared.
No. It didn't affect me at all. I've never really felt like I'm getting older, and it seems that I get younger. People always say, how old are you? And they always say that I kind of look a little bit younger. The reason that I keep this goatee on my face is because when I don't have it, people really do think that I'm a lot younger than I am. So I've actually kept the facial hair to kind of add a little bit of
yeah.
age, if you will.
I can relate.
Yeah, I know.
I do the same thing.
I know. And when I shave it, I look like a kid again. And I kind of like, I've been maybe about 25-ish, so, it's not that young. But, I really attribute it to the fact that we eat very healthy. We drink our green juices. We get outside when we can, particularly in the summertime and the wintertime. We do the best that we can, and we keep moving.
So you didn't hit this huge mental block or anything and say, oh, my God, I'm in my 30s? Or...
No, I didn't. It actually, for me, because we're in this health industry, to me it kind of it builds credibility, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The longer that you've been in this, the more people look at numbers sometimes, people look at certifications and look at all this sort of this stuff for credibility, and it's just one of those things, those added things on top of all the other things that we've done that adds some more credibility to what we're doing, because now that I'm 30, I'm no longer a kid,
Yeah. I've heard other people, maybe even that you interviewed, I don't know, or maybe I've read things with a lot of the people, like, for example, the leaders of the raw food movement, and some of them recommend, when you're looking, I don't know if you're going to say gurus, but when you're looking for somebody to kind of follow their advice, they say, well, look at the person.
Yeah.
And if the person's, doesn't look very healthy, well, maybe that's not the best person to be following their advice, So I hear what you're saying.
And I look to a lot of different people, and I've kind of kind of modeled a lot of the things that I'm doing, at least in my own personal health, based on how some of these people look. And I look at some of the vegan doctors who have been doing this for a very long time, and I look at some of the raw food experts that look good at their age, depending on what age it is.
Yeah.
And those are the people who I want to follow. I don't want to follow someone like Norman Walker. I mean, some people will say he lived to be like 150 or whatever, but I think his death certificate actually said 99. But that's pretty old, I mean, and from what I know, he lived fairly well until his death. So those are the people that we want to model. Those are the people that we want to look at, and those are the people we want to say, hey, what are you doing? And use them as mentors. And if you see, there's nothing more telling than, in terms of results than physical appearance, right?
I think so too. I mean, do you know one thing that I'm wondering if you might agree with this, but I've just kind of noticed lately that do you think there's a difference? This isn't on my question sheet. I just kind of thought of this now that you said that. But do you think there's a difference in the way that men show their age versus women? I mean, it seems like women who are healthier look younger than men who are kind of equally as healthy. I don't know if I'm phrasing this right. It seems like, like guys, you can tell when a guy's healthy, but they also sort of, in my experience, usually kind of look however old they are. Roughly,
right.
They just look like a very healthy version of that age. Whereas when a woman's case, a lot of times, say you take a 50-year-old woman who's been doing raw for a long time, for example, they might look like, in their high 20s or something. I mean, do you notice that, or am I just?
No, I definitely notice it. Though it's in terms of men. The men that stay active, that are fit, that actually keep muscle tone, they always look better.
Yeah.
Always look better. Out in the sun, a lot of people who are doing manual labor who are into a healthier diet, I mean, they look great. And that's a sign to me that we should be doing more vigorous type exercise. I think that's one thing that's definitely missing in the health, you know, the natural health movement is the vigorous exercise, you know, because yeah. And I'm not trying to pigeonhole anything here, but you know, people do kind of gravitate towards the yoga, towards kind of like, you know, peaceful type exercise, but vigorous, you know, nothing can replace like some high intensity cardio, high intensity interval training or some cardio that really gets your heart pumping, because literally as you're doing that, your muscles contracting and you're literally pushing you know, blood out of those little capillaries that kind of are spidered all throughout your body, and then, you know, as you decontract, all the blood is coming back, and you're just pumping things throughout your whole body, even more so than your heart would as you were just sitting around or doing something like that. You're also moving lymph too, so you're moving the really one of the only systems that doesn't have a pump in your body, and the fluid system in your body. You're moving it as well as getting all the cardiovascular benefits. That's why I'm not a big fan of rebounding, because yeah, you can move your lymph if you're rebounding, but why not get some cardiovascular, some high intensity exercise at the same time? It's not good for high intensity exercise, and you know, some people will say, you know, I ask them, you know, they come to me and they say, yeah, you know, I'm not losing weight, and I'm like, all right, well, what are you doing for exercise? They're like, oh, I jump on my rebounder for 20 minutes. And I'm like, guess what, dude?
Right.
It's not going to happen. You know, we really need to get ourselves moving and get our systems functioning pretty smoothly.
So, like, if you're, for example, out shopping for something to do, like making your basement for the wintertime, and you're looking at, like, a rebounder, of course, forget about the money argument, versus, like, a treadmill, you might want to pick the treadmill.
You know, I'm not a big fan of the treadmill either.
Oh, you're not?
but on, in terms of, like, a hierarchy,
uh-huh.
I would say a treadmill before a rebounder. But in terms of the treadmill, I mean, the treadmill is it's an unnatural type exercise. It's a complete, if you're walking on pavement, if you're walking on the sidewalk outside, you're actually pulling your body along the ground. If you're walking on a treadmill, you're actually staying stationary on a moving surface. So you're actually using muscles in a little bit of a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why if anyone who's trained for running or even walking on a treadmill and then go on pavement, like you'll find that your muscles are sore even though you've been training for a long time on a treadmill. And the reason why is because you're using them in different in a different chain of reaction. Okay. So okay. In terms of a treadmill, the other thing is that people tend to use them incorrectly. So they're pounding their heels very hard on the treadmill. And they're literally sending shockwaves up through their knees, through their hips, lower
yeah.
back, and ankles, and can cause, you know, some injury, some overusage injuries using the treadmills. So any sort of treadmill workout, if you're doing one, if you're running or you're walking, always do it on an incline, and always make sure you're taking very small, very quick steps. So you're almost landing midfoot, not heel to toe. And that's kind of the advice that I would give for someone who is on a treadmill. But I mean, it doesn't even compare to the cardiovascular, you know, benefits of being outside and
right.
walking and running, or just being outside in nature and breathing in, you know, the oxygen that's coming
sure.
through. So yeah, you know, I'd rather have a treadmill than a rebounder because it'll do more. It'll do what the rebounder does plus, you know. And I'm really into efficiency when it comes to exercise. So, you know, if you can do as much as possible in as little time as possible, sign me up.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense what you're saying. I've never really thought about it like that. But, you know, I've always been a runner, and every now and then I'll be at a hotel or something and check out their treadmill, and it just feels different.
Yeah, it is. That's why. It's not weird. It's not only you.
Yeah. But that is a good segue into a question I had, which is you know, like us, like Wendy and I, you and Anne-Marie live in a climate with, I guess, to put it euphemistically, has a kind of a limited growing season.
Yeah,
in limited other words, growth. It's damn cold outside.
Yeah,
right,
I know.
Right now, I know Wendy's actually low in vitamin D because we don't get enough sunshine here. It's and in the wintertime, it's even worse. It's, you know, it's so cold. And I guess the question on exercise is, what, you know, what do you recommend for people who, you know, live in these freezing places like we do when the winter sets in and it seems to last forever?
Well, yeah.
You know, what can they do?
Yeah, well, generally the advice is that you need to make some sort of gym in your home, and it doesn't need to require any sort of equipment. You just need a space, 6x6 space. It literally can be the size of your bathroom. And what I have here is I've kind of created this little routine that I use some dumbbells. So I do a little bit of, you know, weight training, strength training. I use an exercise ball, and I have a pull-up bar right between our door here. And so what I do is I do a little rotation that I've created. It's very simple. It just works all the body parts, all the muscles. And it's one of those quick, you know, 10 or 15-minute, 20-minute type routines that kind of just gives me that extra, you know, energy, gives me a little bit of strength training, gets the blood flowing. It's one of those quick things that I can do. And so that's always like a fallback.
Mm-hmm.
So in case, you know, it's too cold to go outside, in case it's too cold to hike, in case it's, you know, snowing out, in case we can't go skiing or something like that, then I'll do that little routine, and, you know, just get it done and know that I've moved. You know, and the reality is that we have to move every day, and sometimes it doesn't happen, and I feel awful when it doesn't happen. And so, you know, knowing that's the case. I mean, if you can get something together that, you know, is real easy to do, real quick to do, something that you don't have to go very far to do, your chances of succeeding are extremely high. In terms of, you know, to kind of the second part of your question, in terms of vitamin D, you know, I found that some people just have to take some sort of vitamin D supplement because it's just not going to happen, you know, outside. You know, you might not get enough sun. You can't, you know, you can't mess with it. It's one of those deficiencies. You don't want to mess with any deficiency, but it's one of those where it's like, look, you know, let's get it taken care of, and while we're getting it taken care of, see if we can take it in a sunlight type approach too.
Sure.
So,
sure. Actually, that leads me to a question for later, but I'll come back to that
mm-hmm.
point. When you were talking earlier about you know, people who stay active for longer, it reminded me of another question I had, which was, and to introduce this, I mean, I've been, I guess you could say, in the corporate world, quote unquote, for like forever, you know,
uh-huh.
and I always see the same thing. You know, we hire these rather fit kids out of college, and they come into the, you know, the system, quote unquote, you know, very, very fit. You know, they're like 22 years old, they just got their degree, and of course they're making way more than I ever made when I was 22.
Right, sure.
But, you know, you give them 5 years behind a desk, and they have a gut. It's just every single guy where I work has a gut, including me. I'm trying to get rid of it. But nowadays, it's like a gut on a 30-something guy seems like almost kind of normal, which is kind of unfortunate, you know, especially in the Northeast here where we wear a lot of sweaters and you can get away with it a little bit more. But I guess, you know, in L.A., they probably can't get away with that. But you know, you try to get rid of that gut when you finally wake up and say, you know, I don't want to be out of shape. And that's tough. And so the question I had is, you know, what's your great, you know, fat melting abdominal fat blaster techniques for men? Is there a secret pill, or do you just?
This is a good question. Now the thing about it in LA, you can't hide it because for some reason, you know, I've been there a few times in the last couple months, and man, the guys, you know, even if they have a gut, they're still wearing like these tight t-shirts and these tight pants. There's no shame. There's just no shame. It's kind of funny. You know, we've come accustomed to being overweight. You know, it's like
yeah.
No big deal. You know, I've got a gut, you've got a gut, everyone else has a gut. So that's kind of what we're dealing with here. But in terms of abdominal kind of fat blasting, I'll tell you my story. I mean, when I was in just out of college, I had a little bit of gut, a beer gut, because I was a very heavy drinker and a partier, and I was about 30 pounds overweight. Now I'm a little underweight because of the whole candida issue and the no sugar. So I'm actually building up again a little bit. And I feel kind of scrawny, so I'm like, you know, I don't really like the way I feel right now. So I'm working to, you know, this winter I'll be working to build up some more muscle and some more bulk because I've lost some of it in the last couple months. But anyway, in terms of getting your stomach, your abs flat, I mean, this is the last thing usually that happens in any sort of weight loss process. So it's one of those things that patience is obviously one of those things that has to be, you know, you have to be patient. You have to kind of hardwire yourself to know that this might be the last thing that goes, you know, the extra flab around the stomach.
Sure.
And So here's the deal. You know, I'd always wanted a six-pack of abs. Always wanted it. I always thought it was, like, the coolest thing. This was when I was single, you know, and I thought that it would, like, bring me a whole bunch of girls and all this sort of stuff, you know, that you know, someone in their late teens, early 20s, you know, would want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was focusing on getting six-pack abs, but it never really happened for me.
Mm-hmm.
It you know, I always had this layer over my stomach that, you know, had, you know, just wouldn't show the six-pack abs. Like, come on, you know, reveal it. And so what I did was I focused on it, and it never happened. And what happened was, you know, after I had kind of transformed, you know, what I was doing from being, you know, a very hard partier to actually cleaning up my diet and everything else, I started focusing on different things, not the six-pack of abs or anything like that, but I started focusing on really what I wanted to do with my own health. And as I was doing that, what happened is that the abs actually started to appear. Because the reality is this, is that no one really wants a six-pack of abs, okay? No one really wants to be on a 100% raw food diet. What they really want is the emotion or the feeling that kind of brings them. So whether it's some sort of control, whether it's some sort of accomplishment, whether it's knowing that you're actually doing good for yourself, for your health, or whether it's you want to feel really good when you're at the bar and, like, you know, you lift up your shirt so the girls can see or something like that. I don't know. But I mean, that's what people want.
Yeah, it's the effect of it.
Yeah, they don't want to put a plaque on the wall that says, I have a six-pack ab.
Yeah.
You know, six-pack of abs, or I am on the 100% raw food diet for 10 years, you know, like, who cares, you know, it's not that big of a deal. What's more important is the bigger picture, and what is it that you want to do. And here's the thing, if I were to tell you that, you know, in order for you to get a six-pack of abs, you needed to do 500 sit-ups a day, which is not true. I mean, this is just kind of a makeup story. But if I was to tell you, you know, you need to do 500 sit-ups a day for 1 year, and you'll get six-pack abs, and what I'm going to give you is I'm going to give you a plaque, you know, and all the emotions around the six-pack abs isn't even going to count. You know, you're not even going to feel these emotions. You wouldn't do it because the motivation is not strong enough.
Mm.
But if I was to say, you know, do 500 sit-ups every day for a year, and the motivation is, you know, you'll be guaranteed, or, well, as close to guaranteed as possible, that, you know, you'll live for an extra 10 years, well, then maybe you'll kind of, like, think about it, and you'll say, all right, well, this makes sense. Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, what's the priority? What's the main priority? And if you can kind of open up your mindset to the possibility that maybe just the, you know, the superficial things in front of you aren't what you're really looking for, then your chances of getting to those levels, getting to those things where, you know, your body looks good, you feel good, your skin looks good, you know, you're eating really healthy, then, you know, then you can really, you know, transform what you're doing. Then you can kind of get over that hump of the superficial things and say, I really know what I want, and here's where I'm going. And that other stuff just kind of comes with it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It is. I always kind of thought about, you know, how I could do it, or how I could get into great shape, or how I could run a marathon. But the reality is once I just started, like, thinking about my health, and thinking about how I could take care of myself, or just taking care of myself on multiple levels, the rest of it kind of came into place. So it's you know, if you aren't achieving your goals, chances are you're not happy with something in your life, and usually it's relationship or job, or it's, you know, I mean, there's other things too, but usually those are the two things,
yeah.
And that's what I found with people. They, you know, people who hold weight hold emotions, they hold resentment, they hold a whole bunch of other things that is stopping them from losing the weight. And usually, and this is kind of going off on a little bit deeper sort of, you know, off a deeper ledge here, but when they can come to terms with that, with what they're holding on to, then they can lose that weight pretty easily. And a lot of times it is the job. You know, it's hard to, or where they're living. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, I can't do anything about that. Well, the reality is you can. It might be a little bit difficult, but those who do difficult things get rewarded. So So I mean, that's kind of the only thing I can say to that is think about it. Take really some introspective time and say, why is this happening to me? And ask yourself important questions that are just like, why is this happening? What's going on? You know, why do I feel this way?
Yeah.
And you'll get answers, and then you'll be able to be honest with yourself. And then you have to ask questions that give you positive answers. So it's like, what can I do to change this?
Yeah.
And then your mind will come up with answers, and then you'll get on your track.
Well, this is awesome, because I just totally am scratching out the next question I had for you, because it kind of doesn't. It's the wrong question, I realize now.
Uh-huh.
I guess and it was going to be about how do you keep your fitness clients, you know, motivated. But I think what I'd rather ask you is, when you have a personal training client, for example, you're really training them as much on a different level other than just how to do sit-ups or something, right?
I have to.
Yeah, so you're talking about a whole different kind of a relationship between a fitness trainer and their client.
Well, a decent fitness professional, I'll say that we're decent fitness professionals, mm-hmm. a decent fitness professional understands that it's not about the exercise and it's not about the nutrition.
Yeah.
It's about creating habits. And if you can create a habit of activity,
mm-hmm.
so it's not even creating just a habit, it's creating a habit of creating habits. If you follow me, it's like you take a step back, and it's almost like systematizing what you're doing and recognizing that in order for you to, you know, if you can create a habit of just asking questions, then that habit will lead to other habits that you create. So a good fitness professional, a good health professional will look at the person and start to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them questions. Figure out what's going on with them. And if you can figure out what's going on, you don't necessarily even need to like be like psychologist, you know, like, well, how did that make you feel? You know,
right.
Did your father ever say anything to you when you were like three? You know what I mean? Like that stuff's ridiculous.
Sure.
But it's just asking questions and figuring out what's going on with someone, and you know, asking them why. It's just like a child. Child asks why, and then the parents suddenly say, I don't know. Don't ask me any more questions. You know, and then that child's like their growth is stunted to some degree, because you know the need to explore is so important, and any good fitness professional is going to ask why, and it's going to figure out. In some way or another, is going to figure out what's going on with the person, and then what they're going to do is they're going to use that. If it's something that, you know, figuring out like what they really want, then they're going to use that to motivate. So, for instance, if you can get into the heart of someone and really figure out what's going on with them and know what their goals are, you can use that specific goal over and over again to motivate them, because you can remind them of that feeling.
Yeah.
You can, you know, for instance, someone, you know, their entire life's passion, you know, is to become a gardener, and right now they're working as a as a book publicist. Who knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and their entire life passion is to become a gardener. Well, you can use that from time to time and say, hey, you know, what are you going to do to really get this gardening thing started? What are you going to do to really get? Because I know that you're going to love doing that. I know it's going to feel amazing. You know, when you have your plants and you have everything in front of you and you have your gloves and your little tools and you just have it set up and all nice rows. I mean, you can get someone in that emotional feeling really good, and then you can get them doing exercise. I mean, this is like an NLP kind of technique here. Then if they're feeling good about that, a feeling that they're very strong about, and then they're doing exercise at the same time, or they're getting healthy at the same time, then they're going to associate those good feelings with getting healthy. So basically what you've done is you've transferred the emotion to a different activity.
Interesting.
And it really can, I mean, you can really change someone's life in a very, very, and this can only be used for altruistic purposes, but you literally can change someone's life just by associating feelings with actions.
Wow. And you've had the experience, direct experience of this with clients, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I do.
Wow! Oh,
yeah.
So that's all. Is exactly what you do.
Yeah.
It's not like a rare. This is like it's not like a technique you would use occasionally. This is something that you would do all the time.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it sounds like you know this whole like structure of like things. It's not. It's just talking about people and knowing what makes them feel good, and then and then telling them again. You know.
Yeah. Right. No. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's a really neat thing.
Yeah, it's a great way to coach people. I think it's the only way to coach people.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do people want? They want to feel good. So if you can make someone feel good, they're going to feel good around you. And if you happen to be coaching them about health, they're going to feel good about health too. They're going to have positive associations to health, which is what we want. We want people to have positive associations about health. Unfortunately, we don't. Unfortunately, people don't have those positive associations about health. But if you can create those good feelings and that buzz, you know, that you feel when you're thinking about something that really motivates you. Like the other night, I was laying in bed and I was thinking about this new book that we're putting out, and I got so excited about it. Like I got excited about it. I got that like buzz, and I was like, oh, I'm so excited about this. And then like I woke up and then I sat down at the desk. I'm like, oh man, I'm so stressed out about this. You know?
Right.
But at that moment, like that feeling, if you can generate that feeling with me again, and get me to do something I don't like to do, chances are I'll like what I'm doing. And some people use it in a negative way. And
yeah,
that's,
I was just thinking of that.
That's where persuasion and NLP kind of takes the dark side. But we're using this, you know, we're using the force for good here. You know, this is Obi-Wan Kenobi sort of stuff.
I was just going to say that because that was the exact comment I had in my head just now was that you're using it for health. I mean, people are living longer because of what you're helping them understand and helping them, you know, work through.
Right.
Versus, you know, I can remember, I was just thinking of how global the possible applications of what you were just talking about, how global they are. Because you could apply this to something, you know, that I would consider, for example, negative. For example, you know, I remember going to a sales seminar because what I do involves sales, to teach people how to sell like financial audits to a company. And you know what? You can do it that way, but I don't really want to sell somebody a financial audit. I don't really care about that.
I know.
And not that that's a negative. I know those are needed too in the world, but it's just an example of how, you know, you can use these techniques to be manipulative if you want.
Oh yeah.
But hopefully you wouldn't. And what's great about what you guys are doing is that you're not. You're using it to help people, and it's you know, it's making people into more vibrant individuals. So it's good to hear.
Yeah. Well, why? I mean, there's no other way. I mean, why even waste your time with other stuff, you know?
Yeah, I know. But I see it because I've, you know, been involved in the quote-unquote corporate world for so long. You run into this stuff from time to time. But
and I've taken courses, you know, using these techniques and all that sort of stuff. And you know, I'd be sitting next to a guy who's using this to, like, pick up girls. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I'm like, great. I'm like, wow, awesome, you know? I don't know what to say about it, you know. I'm like, good, you're going to pick up a girl, great, you know. And then what are you going to do, pick up another girl? I mean, this seems endless.
Well, hopefully there are more people using it for good than for the dark side.
There are.
You know, I'll transition into some questions about diet. You had talked
a beer.
You had talked a bit before about, you know, being a beer drinker and a partier in college. And
uh-huh.
Could you just go over what your transition was like from I don't know if it was quite a sad diet thing, or maybe it was, until a more like living foods diet, and how did that go? Were you one of those people that just snapped and decided, or did you build this up over time, or how?
Well, with the beer drinking, I just snapped and decided.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was getting very good at partying. You know, I probably had a plaque on the wall, you know. So I was becoming increasingly miserable, increasingly angry and lazy, and my friendships were starting to dissolve. And one afternoon, I woke up after being out the night before and literally like peeled my head off the pillow. If you've ever been, you know, drunker than drunk, you know, you pull your head off the pillow and suddenly the room's spinning and everything's going crazy. And I had the foresight or just the insight to ask myself a question. And the question was, is there anything better than this? And luckily, you know, I asked myself a good question, so a good answer came, and the answer was yes. I was like, well, I got to find it. So what I did was I moved home. I immediately quit drinking, and within a week later, I immediately quit smoking cigarettes as well. And that was it. You know, that was the last time I'd ever done any of those things. But in terms of nutrition, you know, after I moved home, my mother gave me a book. It was called The Seeker's Guide by Elizabeth Lesser. And that book was about spirituality. She was the founder of Omega Institute. And she, you know, the book kind of opened my mind to more possibility and kind of started me on a health path. I always had been into fitness, mm-hmm. but I had never really known that much about nutrition. I remember living in that apartment, you know, the first time one of my roommates was a little bit into health, and she brought home this natural peanut butter. and it had this like oil on top of it. So I poured out the oil because I'd never seen oil on top of peanut butter. I thought it like settled or something like that, you know.
Sure.
So I mean, I really didn't know. And my mother kind of cooked healthy things, but you know, I played tennis in high school, and my idea of a energy boosting snack was a Twinkie and a Mountain Dew right before a tennis match. And
like
on top of that, we would go out. My doubles partner and I were the top doubles team in the conference. We would drive out behind the high school and we'd smoke a cigarette, and then we'd come into the tennis match. So, I mean, I really wasn't taking care of myself. But in terms of live foods, it took me a couple years after I quit drinking to get into live foods. And a friend of mine gave me some MP3s, and he said, listen to these. I'm like, okay. And I just put it, they were just on my computer. They were on my iPod. And I just didn't even, I never listened to them. I just never even thought about it. So one day I was going out to run. And I said, you know, I kind of want to listen to my iPod when I'm running, see if there's, you know, see if I like that, because I really hadn't done that much. And so I popped in the, you know, popped the headphones in my ear, and I was searching around in the iPod, you know, twirling around that little dial and just trying to figure out what I wanted to listen to. And David Wolfe came up, and so this was the MP3 that my friend had given me, a bunch of them. So I just pressed play, and I started running. And that entire summer, I listened to David Wolfe as I was running. David Wolfe ran the Mount Greylock Trail Marathon with me. He doesn't know it. I actually told him when I introduced him at one of the last talks that he did. And he ran the Mount Greylock Trail Marathon with me. But as I was listening to it, I said, wow, this stuff is amazing. This is so different than what I've heard before. It has such common sense behind it, a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, I was missing a lot. So that's when I really kind of got into, you know, the living food side of it, and kind of transitioned out of kind of the whole food protein type model, you know, the fitness type model, and then into living foods and realizing that maybe, just maybe, we didn't need as much protein as we thought we did. Mm-hmm. And so that's how my transition went.
How do you feel now versus then? Do you know, or if you?
Well, now, like right now, personally, like where we are, December 2008, I feel less energetic now,
uh-huh.
And the reason why is because of the last like year and a half of little health challenges that I've gone through. So I'm building to get back to where I was about 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I had completed a bunch of marathons. I felt amazing, like literally the best shape of my entire life.
Wow.
And then I went on a path where I started experimenting a little bit more with my diet, trying a little more exotic type foods on a regular basis, and they started to cause issues in my body. So I got a rash, eczema on my skin, minerals. I was depleted in minerals. My immune system started to go haywire. I ended up getting bit by a tick and getting Lyme disease.
You had that too?
Oh, what's that? Oh, yeah.
I didn't know you had that.
Oh, yeah. I ended up taking a Western and Eastern type approach to take care of the Lyme disease. So I did a little bit of an antibiotic protocol as well as natural herbs and supplements to boost my immune system while it was happening.
Wow.
And as I was doing that, I ended up with candida. And so, so I mean, it kind of like everything kind of like, you know, kind of started to really kind of snowball. And then when I finally, like, you know, realized that I got the candida, I kind of traced everything back, realized what was happening to me. And so now I'm in a rebuilding process, and it's been a couple months of some pretty strong rebuilding minerals. I feel great now in terms of minerals. My energy level is much better. I was sleeping a lot, and I was surprised. I was kind of scared because I'd never had a health challenge before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a self-imposed health challenge, which is funny because, you know, we can go so far into this paradigm that suddenly we're like harming ourselves, and that's what happened to me. And so now I'm like taking a step back and saying, all right, well, now I know where not to go anymore. You know, what are the basics that I need to know? And so now as those energy levels are building, I'm feeling, you know, much better. So I would say, in terms of, say, if you were to say that point in my life 2 years ago when I was running these marathons, if you were to say that pinnacle was, you know, I would never say 100%, but say that's like 95% of my optimal health, I'd say I'm probably about an 82, 80, 85% right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and with these health challenges now, I didn't know about the Lyme disease. That's,
yeah.
Wow. Did you get that from like out running?
No, from the cat, man.
From the cat?
Yeah, the cat brought the tick in.
Johnny Five.
I've never pulled a tick off of myself after running in the woods. I run on trails, and I've never pulled a tick off myself. The cat brings them in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he an inside cat now?
No, he's still an outdoor cat, but we just keep him out of the bedroom.
Wow.
You know, and so I saw the EM, the rash. I mean, I knew what it was. I said, wow, this is not interesting. You know, I'm not excited about this, you know.
So now, you were talking about the, that lead into the candida somehow?
Yeah, it did, because I took the antibiotics, and the antibiotics wiped out the good bacteria in my stomach, as well as, you know, the Lyme and everything else. So, I mean, the thing was this, I really believe in getting mentors around you who can help you when you're in situations like this, whether it's business coaching, whether it's personal coaching, it's health coaching, whatever. And so I called on a few of my mentors, and they said to me, and they said, this is what they said. They said, look, Lyme disease is an acute bacterial infection. They said, it is not something that, you know, it's not like, you know, heart disease. Or it's not, you know, one of these, like, Western-type diseases. Like, this is bacteria in your body. You need to get it out.
Yeah.
And so they said, I would suggest taking a two-pronged approach, taking antibiotics plus a natural approach. And so that really helped me make my decision. And so as I was doing it, I was eating a raw diet. I was eating an 80-10-10 type diet, and there was just way too much sugar as I was wiping out the bacteria for the yeast to just completely bloom. I mean, you should have seen... this is kind of disgusting, but it's kind of instructive. Is literally there were cotton ball sized pieces of yeast coming out of my intestines, which was just, I mean, it was fascinating because I was like, wow, I'm like, look at this.
Yeah, that ain't right.
I know. I'm like this, but it was amazing because I was like, cool, because you know I know what it is, I know what's happening, I understand what's going on. I took tests to determine what was going on. And so I had this profile of I know I've identified the cause. Now let's do a treatment and let's get it done and get better. And that's happened. So now I really think that that's incredible knowledge, you know, incredible personal as well as useful knowledge for everyone else. It's because a lot of people in the natural health industry, they think they have something. They self-diagnose themselves. They talk to other people. They find online. They read some books. They think they have something. And then they go through a protocol, and the protocol doesn't work. But who's to say that that protocol was actually supposed to go for what they actually have? Maybe they don't have what they thought they did. And that protocol didn't work anyway. So they don't actually do any sort of testing to determine what's going on with the body, whether there's certain mineral levels, whether, you know, they have any sort of deficiency in vitamin D or B12 or you know, any sort of thyroid issues or anything like that. They don't do any of these tests. And they're kind of like, you know, shooting in the dark. And then, you know, we wonder why Western medicine looks at us like we're, you know, like clowns, because, you know, we don't have any sort of scientific method. Doesn't need to be science, but scientific method to actually determine what's working or not. You know, some of it's just folklore, and that's not good. You know, because we want to bring this to the public.
So, you quote unquote knew what you had, but then what did you do? Go to the doctor and say, look, I think I have this. Can you to test it to make sure?
I consulted with Dr. Richard DeCenzo, who is kind of my one of my personal health mentors. And I consulted with him, and I said, hey.
Oh, you consulted, your mentor was a doctor.
Oh, yeah. Both of my mentors are doctors, yeah. I mean, they're natural health doctors.
Gotcha, okay.
But they're doctors, yeah. And so I went to them. Yeah, it wasn't like my business coach, you know.
Yeah.
Kyle, what do you think I should do about this?
Well, I thought maybe just another.
Press releases. But I went to him, and I said, well, you know, I'm pretty sure I have candida because, you know, I have acne, my stomach hurts, you know, I have all these symptoms that kind of show, you know, there's a candida issue. And I said, well, can I go ahead and take an IgA, IgG, IgMSA and see what's going on? He's like, sure. So he sent all the paperwork in for me. And any sort of natural health doctor or any sort of nutritionist or any sort of, you know, MD will be able to order tests for you. You can just go to them and say, hey, I want a test. And they'll say, what's going on? You say, well, you know, I think this, and I'm kind of like this renegade, and I do this my own health thing. I just kind of wanted to do it just for fun, maybe an experiment. You know, you don't need to, like, you know, feel threatened by these people. And then you can get the test, you can get the results back, or they get it and they read it for you. And you can see in my levels, I forget which one it was, I don't know if it's IgG or IgM, but one of them was very high, and that means that there was an external infection. And what external means is just on the outside of the skin, not internal. And your digestive system is actually, technically, is actually external as well, because, you know, you are just a tube from your mouth to your butt. So that's what that showed. And I said, wow, so I have a candida infection intestinally, and that's what, you know, that's what I was dealing with. So it was nice to see it. And I'll take another one in a couple months just to kind of demonstrate that it's decreased, which, because I know it has, because my skin is cleared up. My stomach aches are completely gone. You know, if I eat things, it doesn't bloom again, sort of thing. So it's been a really awesome process. I'm thankful for it, to be honest with you. I'm thankful for the Lyme. I'm thankful for the candida, and I'm thankful for the low energy levels that the overuse of cacao brought me to. Because if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't, one, be able to experience what other people feel when they're going through health challenges, and it's not fun. You know, people can feel very lost when they're going through something like this, and that's absolutely something that I don't want anyone to ever experience. And I'm thankful that, you know, I can now explain to other people, you know, some of the things that I've experienced and some of the little, you know, intricate little things that I've learned along the way that will actually help someone with complete 100% personal knowledge that this is what worked for me.
And you still aren't. You're not even mad at Johnny Five.
I'm not mad at the cat. I love the cat.
I'm kidding around.
You know, my teeth started to get sensitive too. So that's another thing. I mean, basically, what happened to me was like every single thing that happens to like raw fooders, you know, and it just all happened all at once, and it was pretty awesome.
Wow. You've gone over all this. I was going to ask you about. I know you did an episode of Renegade Health Show when you were concerned about your teeth and. Didn't you do a book about keeping your teeth healthy with healthy teeth and gums recently?
Yeah, not yet. Well, that's coming up.
Okay, that's coming up. That's something
But there's something about you know, something about it that I hadn't realized, and maybe someone who's been at this longer than I have knows. But I was realizing a few things about my teeth. One is that I was drinking smoothies on a regular basis, and I was drinking fruit smoothies on a regular basis, and so I would get up in the morning. And I would get some water, and I would start to work, and then I'd make a smoothie. So I'd drink a smoothie from like 8:30 or 9 o'clock to like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would never brush, you know, my teeth in between. I'd brush my teeth in the morning, but I never brushed my teeth in between. And so what was happening is I was literally washing sugar over my teeth all day long.
Constantly.
And if anyone thinks that's not going to cause cavities, you're absolutely wrong.
Right.
So it didn't cause cavities, but it started to really get my teeth very, very sensitive and literally aching. They would, like, I would take any sort of sugar and my teeth would ache like crazy. And so I you know, knew that I needed to go to the dentist. The other thing that was happening is that I was drinking a lot of green juice. So my teeth, it looked like they were starting to actually get like darkish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But what I realized, luckily, afterwards is that the green juice was just staining my teeth. So I was able to use some baking powder, baking soda, baking powder to actually eliminate. Is it baking soda or baking powder? I get those two confused. Whatever it is, the white stuff that you brush your teeth with.
Yeah.
But I was able to use some of that, and it actually completely cleaned up the dark spots that were on my teeth. And I was like, oh wow, cool. But that was just stains from the green juice. So just a thing to look out for. Some people may think that their teeth are starting to turn black when they're actually just, you know, drinking a little too much green juice and need a little bit of the baking powder.
So, I mean, when your teeth get sensitive, I don't know if you know the answer to all this stuff, but I'll ask you anyway.
Minerals.
When your teeth get sensitive like that, it just seems like, man, my teeth are screwed up now, but I guess they can get better.
Yeah, your teeth, if you have hot, cold sensitivity, your teeth can get better. It's a mineral issue.
Hmm.
So it's an alkaline acid type balance issue in your body and in your saliva and your mouth. So anyone who's feeling that way, whose teeth are getting hot, cold, sensitive, who are starting to get a little bit transparent, it's a mineral issue. And so it's an acid alkaline balance. So eating foods that are alkaline is really going to help you out. But here's the deal. Sometimes our digestive systems are impaired. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that we're digesting our food well too. And that's why probiotics, that's why digestive enzymes, that's why those things can help as well, because you'd be eating the best diet in the world, but if your conversion process or your stomach, your gut isn't working properly, then you're not doing yourself as good as you could be. You know, you're not getting all the minerals. You're not getting the absorption that you could from the food that you're eating. And so I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, some people who go into the raw food diet, even if they're eating a lot of greens, why they become mineral deficient is because even though they're eating this stuff, their body is just isn't able to assimilate it properly. And it's an issue of gut health, you know, flora, whether there's any sort of pathogen that's in the gut, or if they're just not, there's the HCL levels in their stomach is off, so it's not digesting their food as well as it could.
But dentists never tell you that, though. They never say, oh.
Dentists don't know. They don't know.
Weird, isn't it?
Well, they've been taught that, you know, the teeth are the teeth, and whatever they do, you know, whatever, however they look is it. You know, like, here's what I can do. It's the same Western type thing. Okay, so you have this, and let's give you this, and then we'll hope that it works.
We won't look at it as a whole system.
It's the same deal. It's the same deal. And it's the same with osteoporosis. I mean, that's an acid-alkaline balance issue, too. I mean, you know, the body leaching, you know, taking calcium from the bones to actually help it reach a homeostasis at 7.34 or 7.35 or whatever that actual pH number is. It's variable, slightly variable. But, you know, that's no one mentions that. You know, take more calcium. You know, and we think in this type mentality that if you take calcium, it will, like, you know, literally, like, stick to calcium and become like bone.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the, you know, if you take two pieces of plastic and kind of like put them together, do you expect that they'll stick?
Yeah.
You know, and the reality is no. I mean, you need to have some sort of catalyst, or you need to have something that's gonna actually glue them together.
Well, I see we probably got about 20 minutes left, so I'm gonna cruise along with some of these questions.
Cool.
I'm gonna skip over a few, but when you look at all the different, you know, the most popular approaches toward raw and living foods in this arena specifically, you know, you got your, and there's some people who are, you know, they're diehard, 80-10-10 is the only thing that's going to save you, you know, and then there's the people who say, oh, it's, well, rainbow green is the ultimate thing. I mean,
right.
And the Hippocrates, and there's all these different, you know, methods. I mean, what are your thoughts on just the fact that there's so many, I mean, you know how people are always, they kind of tend to want to say one's better than the other, or
yeah.
I mean, do you feel all these are healthy diets, or is there something missing from these diets?
Well, I use this example, and it's an interesting example. It's the Fit for Life example. Are you familiar with Harvey Diamond, wrote Fit for Life?
Maybe, you know, I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
In the 80s, and he was a natural hygienist, and so his whole approach was you know, mainly a fruit-type diet. Greens, vegetables, but, you know, no superfoods, low fat kind of approach. He's completely changed his tune.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't eat that way anymore. So I think what happens is that at times the information gets encapsulated in time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not evolving. I think what's missing in the diet industry or in the health industry is a system that fits into all systems. So a system that you can look at and say, okay, so here's the system that I can use in order to find the diet that's right for me. And that, I think that's really missing. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to create, because that's where you get real success. Because it's a system of exploration, of exploring your own health and your own diet. So, you know, I will tell you that. You know, some people who have written books in the 70s aren't eating the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, another perfect example. I mean, this has literally come through us, through years and years and years of you know, misinformation, is the book, A Diet for a Small Planet. Mm-hmm. And in that book, this was the seminal book. I forget the author's name right now, but this is a seminal book that said, you know, rice and beans eaten together create a complete protein.
Right, right. Okay.
Well, the complete protein that she was comparing that to meat, and that's to assume that eating meat all the time was the best and optimal health, the
sure.
best thing to do for your optimal health. And in reality, now that we've seen enough research, we know that that's not the case. So does it make sense? Do we need to eat rice and beans in the same meal anymore? And the answer is no, because we can get our amino acids from plenty of different places. So I mean, that's been carried through us since the 60s when that book first came out. And so all this information that we have, she's since, you know, completely just disconnected with that. You know, she doesn't even believe in that anymore, and she's publicly announced it, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we're doing now, we're getting all this information. I mean, the reality is that we all know what the basic is, and this is my high raw approach. The basics are this: eat plants, right? You know, 75% to 95% of your plants should probably be eaten raw. 0% to 20% cooked, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds, whatever. And then the other 5% is fun. And if you choose animal protein in that 5%, that's okay. You know, we're not gonna you know, come down on you. The
sure.
second part is you need to prioritize your health. You need to make sure that you know where you're going with your health. And if you were to ask anyone what their top five priorities are, health is not going to be on them. If you ask like, you know, 20 or 30 people that you find on the street, health is not the top priority.
You don't think, really?
No.
You mean among the top or in the top few?
I don't even think it's in the top five.
Wow.
I don't even think. I mean, now they might say it just because, you know, they might think that you want them to answer that,
mm-hmm.
but there's more, you know. And so I mean, we haven't prioritized our health at all because we just kind of think that we're kind of given what we got. You know, this is it. That's all we have.
Go ahead.
Yep.
I think sometimes, you know, a lot of people who are involved, like for example, in your websites and your Rockathon interviews and all that kind of stuff. We're kind of the choir. So, you know, sometimes you're preaching to the choir. When you say a statistic like that, it's just shocking because what do you mean nobody's concerned about their health? Everybody's concerned, but
well, they're concerned, but it's not a priority.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Like, but I mean, for a lot of people who are, you know, probably going to listen to this interview, it is a priority.
Yeah.
But for maybe the average person on the street, it's shocking to hear that maybe it's not.
People think it's their genes.
Yeah.
These are just my genes. This is, you know, my family had heart disease. They don't look at the fact that their family eats like bratwurst every night.
I know.
You know, it's like, you know, you want to, like, literally, I mean, as weird as mean as it sounds, you want to like slap on the head, be like, dude. Look at your environment. You know, I get it with my family all the time. They're like, oh, my mom's like, this is my genes. I'm like, it's not. It's your environment. It's what you grew up with.
Yeah.
Your genes just choose to express themselves. Like the 3% of genes that actually matter, that actually express themselves, I mean, the 3% of like your whole health picture that actually might just depend on your genes, I mean, you need to like work to get that to express.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you know, and the other three parts of the high raw print, the high raw lifestyle. I mean, know what your body's doing. So either take tests, learn how to intuitively sense it, educate yourself, and take action. Simple. You don't need to worry about, you know, how much fruit you need to eat or anything like that. You'll be able to find out by exploration, by education, and taking action.
Wow. Yeah, it's just wow. It's a fascinating approach. I'm glad you're taking it. It seems to need to be taken by someone out there.
Has to be, or else we're really gonna end up in a pretty horrible situation as a population. And even people who are into this health thing, you know, they you know, we still, and I include myself in this. We still don't look at the basics. Sometimes we forget the basics, and the basics are the foundation. So if you have an unshakable foundation, you're gonna have unshakable health.
You know, this leads me to another question. We were talking about all the different diets there are and all the different, you know, approaches, even within, say, you know, the raw and living foods world, and then in general, in some of the related areas, there's so much information. And mm-hmm. I know that you're an information professional, you know, I guess you could call yourself that. You really interview people and deal with a lot of people. And you know, I was just wondering, you know, with all the health books and all the interviews and all the projects that you're involved in, I mean, are you experiencing some kind of information overload in your life? Or are you able to assimilate all this somehow? How does that?
Here's what I do. I have a system for this. That's good.
Oh.
I'm glad you asked. I have a system.
Surprise, surprise. Kevin's got a system.
Every time I hear someone or every time I hear an interview, I take one thing from it and then I attempt to apply it for a week or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I only take one thing. I forget everything else. I mean, I don't forget it, but I just
right.
I just know that it's going to be too much. I apply it. Like literally, I listened to an interview with Sally Fallon, and I ate goat cheese for 2 weeks, and I felt awful. I was like, all right, well, maybe this isn't working for me. But it opened to my mind. It opened my mind to the possibility that maybe, you know, I might need goat cheese, and I didn't feel right, and I didn't feel good, and that doesn't mean I'll never eat it again, but, you know, not like I did for that 2 weeks. And then I listened to James Sheridan right after that, and, you know, I was thinking about taking some sort of, you know, maybe krill oil again or something like that. And then, you know, James Sheridan, I listened to him, and he said, you know, marine phytoplankton will work. I said, okay. Started taking marine phytoplankton. Just listening to all the information, reading something, taking one thing, and then applying it. And knowing that if my slate is filled, it's just, I don't even worry about it. It's just out of my mind, out of sight, out of mind. You know, you kind of just push the information off and say, I'm not going to worry about this anymore right now.
Wow.
You know? And I think that's a really good approach, because we do get bombarded with information. And I don't think that we should slow down the amount of information. I think what we should do is we should just learn more efficiently how to filter it and how to use it for your own benefit. Because if you're actually able to take your health and you're actually to take all these bits of information and apply them on a regular basis, then you're really going to get good results.
Right.
And it's going to be good results. It's going to be a constant building of good results instead of just, you know, being a flash in the pan, doing one you know, thing for 2 weeks and then not doing anything ever again for the next year, and then doing it again at New Year's or something crazy like that, you know.
What do you think of that marine phytoplankton?
I like it. I think it's probably the closest thing for, you know, long chain of essential fatty acids that we can take without taking animal products or animal you know, animal products that actually require the destruction of animals, which I'm not really happy about. That's one of the reasons why I've stayed away from some of the companies that market, you know, kind of products that literally mass slaughter animals, whether it's, I mean, either little shrimp or whatever. You know, I'm not really a big fan of that. You know, we've tried to eliminate all the leather products that we have. We've just, you know, we're a work in progress, but we really want to stay away from that. And if I ever were to eat an animal product on a regular basis, it would be something like an egg or something like a raw dairy product, because I just feel that I don't want to be involved in the mm-hmm. in the destruction of life like that.
No, I got that's. Would you eat dairy?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like a purist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I experiment from time to time. I told you about the Sally Fallon interview. That was recently. You know, I said, well, I'll get some raw goat cheese. I haven't had cheese in, holy cow. I mean, I hadn't had cheese in like 3 years or so, you know. So I said, all right, you know, I'll try it. And so 3 or 4 years. And so I tried it, and I said, it's not for me. So I'm not a purist. I mean, it's all under the veil or the umbrella of optimal health.
Sure.
So if it fits into my philosophy of, you know, treating you know, animals you know, fairly and not cruel treatment of animals, then I'll try it. It's not that big of a deal.
Cool.
To me. I won't eat a lot of it because I know that animal protein does lead to Western type diseases. But if you know, you look at some, here's a good example. You look at something like the China study.
Right.
And something that P. Colin Campbell like completely brushed over. I don't know if you saw this or not, but 1.5% of the rural Chinese, their diet had animal protein. 1.5% of it was animal protein.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if someone had a 2,000 calorie diet, it's only 30 calories, right, a day.
Okay.
It's still 30 calories. You know, I mean, 30 calories is a little significant.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and here's the thing. It's not to say that 1.5% is like, you know, the ticket to optimal health. But what if that influenced it?
Yeah.
And so I look at that a little bit. And T. Colin Campbell just says, oh, yeah, completely vegan. And I'm like, but what about that 1.5%? And not to say that 1.5% is it. You know, I want to make that very clear. And that's why I don't eat any animal product on a regular basis that would kind of work into those 1.5% numbers. I mean, probably an animal product like a dairy thing like that probably slips into my diet like once every 6 months. And usually it's like, you know, there's a broth that I have and I eat it at my family's house. My mom's like, oh, that's chicken broth. I'm like, oh, great, you know, like, oh, animal protein, you know, whatever. So that's like the whole, that's something that you know, I think we maybe need to look at. You know, I know that people like Norman Cousins did eat raw goat's milk, but, you know, it's just not for me in a regular basis. Right now, it could be, but not right now.
You know, speaking of different foods, I'm going to have to probably wrap this up in about five.
Mm-hmm.
Did you eat cashews? Are you a fan of those? Because I think I read somewhere that you're like crazy about them, but then you don't eat them.
I was crazy about them. I've given up my addiction on raw cashews.
Really? So if I put like 2 cups of raw cashews, fresh
not
organic,
anymore.
From a store right in front of you, you wouldn't like chow down the whole bowl?
You know, they actually caused a bloom from the candida.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, and so that was interesting for me because, you know, it's interesting, you know, having read all the like candida stuff online,
mm-hmm.
and having read some books about it too, you like... You kind of now know, you know, I kind of now know, like, what's right and what's not.
Oh.
Like, people will say, you know, like, peanuts, like, raw peanuts, even roasted peanuts, say will cause a candida bloom. But for me, it didn't. But for the cashews, absolutely.
Wow.
Like, literally within like, 8 hours, like, the acne on my face would just, you know, explode.
Wow.
And so that was really telling. That was really good. You know, other things in terms of, you know, candida... I mean, any sort of sugar, any sort of fruit would cause it,
mm-hmm.
cause a flare-up. But, you know, greens were fine. Apple cider vinegar was fine. Nutritional yeast was fine. What else was fine? You know, just things that some people would say no to, some people say yes to. I mean, people say yes or no to apple cider vinegar. They say yes or no to nutritional yeast. I mean, it's like you just don't know. Unless you actually go to a lab and you put the stuff in a little petri dish and you know like pour nutritional yeast on candida and like see if they bloom, you know.
But for you, I mean, were cashews so bad that you like that's a no-no for you? Do you think? Or if you saw a bowl of them at a holiday party, you think you'd throw three of them back?
No, I wouldn't eat them now.
No.
No. It's funny, you know, I'm talking that I might eat like a piece of like goat's cheese like every like once a month or something like that.
Yeah.
But I won't eat like cashews anymore. But that's where I am right now, you know. And that might change.
Sure, sure. Well,
but,
hey. Yeah.
But what I want to make it very clear that when I say that I would eat dairy, I want to make it very clear. Some people take this wrong. I mean, I would eat it like once a month kind of thing. You know what I mean? And some people say, oh, you eat dairy. And it's just like sweets. You know, say, oh, yeah, agave nectar. And, like, you know, then people think that they can like, literally open the bottle and, like, drink the stuff.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that. You know, you've been Mr. Controversy here on your blog lately.
Oh, my gosh.
Between
I'm just trying to tell it like it is.
And now it's agave, right? It's like a...
Yeah.
There's a whole controversy.
There's been some back and forth about agave. And there's conflicting information like there is everything. But here's the thing. We don't need any more sugar in our diets.
Right.
We don't need to add sweetener to our food. We don't need to add sweetener to anything. And if you do it every once in a while as a treat, and I mean every once in a while, like, you know, a little treat, like maybe once a week, you know, like really, really small. If you do it every once in a while, it's okay. I would prefer honey. But, you know, we don't need to be using this stuff. And I think it makes sense. I'm glad that this controversy came out because now it kind of gives me the opportunity to, like, bring it back to the basics. Is like, we don't need to sweeten things. Our fruit is definitely sweet enough. We've already hybridized a lot of it to be even sweeter than it usually is.
And it should be, probably.
So we're cool. We're cool with sugar. You know, our body needs it. Our body needs glucose for our brain to function. It needs muscle glycogen to actually be able to move. Our blood sugar needs to be to maintain a certain homeostasis in order for us to be in optimal health. But we don't need extra sugar. You can get sugar from your food, from your fruit, from your vegetables, from root vegetables, from tomatoes. I mean, they have a little sugar in them.
It's a good point. I agree. Well, hey, Kevin, thanks for being our guest interview here today.
You got it.
And I think Wendy will probably call you tomorrow, and you guys can work that out.
Cool.
To do the second part of the interview.
Well,
the bonus interview.
Wow, the bonus interview. That'd be awesome.